Folks, hi there once again. This is Elvin Shamrock, and welcome to our teleseminar. Since you always get new people joining us all the time, I'll just share with you again. We have one active participant today who posed some questions, sent them to us via email, and we're going to go through those questions. Invariably, they're relevant to everyone, even though it's a specific question for that individual. But you'll all find it very beneficial. So with that out the way, let's get straight on. Anne, are you there, Anne?
Yes, I'm here.
And welcome, and thank you very much for volunteering. So, and I have in front of me the email, a copy of the email that you sent. But for people listening in, why don't you go and pose the questions in your own words, and we'll take them, the issues, one by one. Okay? So go ahead.
Yes, I'm here. Let me just pull up
okay.
The questions that I sent.
Sure.
Okay. So just to give everyone a little bit of background, I'm a OB hospitalist, and I went into hospitalist medicine straight out of residency. So some of the questions that I had were very specific to that. I was asking, what can I put on my office list? Because I don't practice in a clinic. I only practice in the hospital. Can postpartum admits be included? How about an inpatient consult that I only saw once? How about an ED consult that gets admitted to another service? I'm currently only including OB triage patients and ED consults that are getting discharged, but I was wondering if I could include anything more than just that.
So this is a logistical issue, and a lot of people, especially subspecialists, are experiencing something similar to you. First, to adequately answer this question, I want you to understand the psychology. Let's take the office section first for you. You've got to generate a list of 40 cases in the office section, which, if you look at it from the examiner's point of view, and this is key, you need a decent spread of pathology to sink your teeth into. And the typical thing that you're going to find is every patient of yours, you're going to say, well, it was this in pregnancy, that in pregnancy. And the fact that she was pregnant is not really relevant to the discussion. So look at your list of patients or potential patients for the office section. What office-relevant conversations can I find amongst my patients who admittedly are all pregnant? That's okay. But let's go through it now. In the vaginal discharge section, you could very easily have a trichomonas, a yeast infection. You could have a BV. Unlikely to get GC and chlamydia, but you could get those three things. So it shouldn't be difficult to find those issues. Then maybe, I'm sure you have a patient. She's pregnant, but she also happens to be a smoker. Maybe also happens to be a drug addict. Maybe also happens to be consuming alcohol. So you can choose those cases. The easiest one is the smoker. And present it as, I'm just making it up, 25-year-old Gravita 2-1 heroin in early pregnancy with smoking, habitual smoker. The treatment is smoking cessation counseling. The results would be improved or no change or ceased smoking. That just gets you the case on your case list. Now you have to be ready to have a conversation. Not so much of smoking in pregnancy, which you got to know, but smoking in general. What are the effects of smoking from a non-pregnant point of view? So you could do that. UTI would be a very easy one to have. You know, I'm just going to. I think. I've got the list of categories right here near me. Here we. I've got a partial list. Okay, so I'm just going. I'm going down to the list of categories in the office section. Preventative health screening, immunization. So you can choose any patient. She may have received a smallpox vaccination in pregnancy, HPV, influenza. You can put that down, and then I would word it, for example, counseled on acceptable versus non-acceptable vaccines in pregnancy. Because when you write that down on paper and the examiner reads it, he or she is almost obligated to ask you, well, which vaccinations are acceptable in pregnancy, which are not, and why? So I would encourage you to do that. You can get another two cases with vaccine, with vaccination. I'm looking, what else do we have here? Contraceptive counseling. You counsel these patients on postpartum contraception. That goes in. Now I have to give you a warning. If one of these patients that you're thinking of using for your office section, if she is individually listed on your OB section because you delivered her and it wasn't just a simple, straightforward case, there was an issue and she has to go on your OB side, then you can't use that particular case on the office section. You can't have a patient appearing, the same patient appearing twice on your case list. Does this make sense thus far to you, Anne?
Yes, it does. If she's in my office section, then and there was an OB complication or something, do I also have to include her in the OB section, or can I just use her as an office patient then?
Well, you can use her as an office patient.
Okay.
But if you admitted her, or if she was admitted and you delivered her, and there's a complication of some kind, and I'm, you know, a yeast infection doesn't require admission as an OB patient. So there's an OB meaty complication. Then that you don't have a choice. That patient has to appear on the OB list. And once it appears on the OB list, that case is no longer available to you for the office list. You follow?
Yes, I understand.
Okay, then another one comes from sexually transmitted infections. You may be fortunate enough to have a patient with syphilis in pregnancy. If she's not, if you didn't do the delivery, same issue as what I just mentioned, you can put her in the office section. The fact that she was pregnant is really irrelevant. It's just be able to discuss syphilis, diagnosis, clinical presentation, and treatment, in and out of pregnancy. And so you can go down the list. It's possible. No, I'm trying to get something in the pelvic organ prolapse scenario, but it's unlikely that you would diagnose that in pregnancy. So and ultrasound, if you, it's the same issue as I mentioned before. If you did an ultrasound for unsure dates or fetal weight estimation, put it down in that category. You've got 40 cases. You want to try and get 40 conversations going that don't repeat one on the other. Now, I'm telling you, it's going to be difficult to get 40 conversations, each one being totally different. There might be a minor degree of overlap, but you want to give your examiner something to sink his or her teeth into. So does that answer your question, Anne?
Yes, it does.
Okay, good. Let's move on then with your next question. Go ahead.
Yes, the next question is in similar lines too. As a hospitalist, I see a lot of ED consults, so there's a lot of first trimester demises that are getting counseled for medical versus surgical management. Right now, I have them all listed in my office section, but I also see in the gynecology section, it says procedural management of abnormal first trimester pregnancy. If these patients are getting an MVA, a manual vacuum aspiration, in the emergency room and getting discharged, can they still go on the gynecology section, or are they only eligible for the office?
I would do the following. I can never guarantee what ABOG is going to say, but the kind of recommendations that I give have never, ever caused a single candidate a single problem over the last 25 plus years. So I would say, even if you've done a minor procedure, a manipulation, you can put it on the GYN side. It's a first trimester loss, which required an interaction. But you see, the point that I want to make, if you're going to put that case on the GYN list, I want you to direct the focus of the case to the conversation you want to have. So you've got a case who had manipulation X on this first pregnancy, first trimester loss. What I would add to try and get the conversation going, which is a decent, legitimate GYN conversation, I would add patient counseled on therapeutic options. That can stimulate a decent conversation between you and examiner. Would you agree with that response, Anne?
Yeah, that sounds great.
So you, by all means, you can use those cases. And then the way you write it up should try and focus the conversation in the direction that you're trying to accomplish. Okay?
Yes.
Okay. Next question, go ahead.
Okay, my next question, basically already covered it, but it was the same thing, but regarding labial abscesses, Bartholin's that get IND'd in the ED and discharged.
Yeah, put them in. You know, if it's a, there's a category in the office, I believe, minor office surgical procedures. You could put it in there, and unless ABOG has recently taken that category out, I'm not aware that they have. You could put that in the office section. You could also put it in the GYN section. You could, if you've got two cases like this, for example, put one in the office and one in the GYN. Since it's a soft call on the GYN side, I would recommend you push to 21 cases, just in the unlikely event that they say this case doesn't really count. Then if you've only got 20 cases, it'll drop you to 19, and then you'd have a problem. So if you think you're pushing it a little bit, which I don't mind you doing, but if you think you're pushing the definition a little bit, then just keep it, you know, add an extra case on your list to cover for that pushing case. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Okay. What else?
Another question that I had, I keep seeing that you should include all of the admissions that are under your name for both the OB and the GYN service. But as a hospitalist, a lot of the times these patients are admitted towards the tail end of my shift, so maybe I will do their admission and their H&P, but then I'm not involved in their care at all going forward.
So
should I really be including every single admission under my name on my list?
Are you talking about deliverable admissions or non-deliverable admissions? Which
both.
One?
Both. Both. Mostly the deliverable ones, because a lot of the times it's a scheduled induction. They come in, I do their H&P and admit them, and then they get delivered by a hospitalist on the next shift or the shift after that. So all I was really involved with was admitting them.
If look at it this way. If you had a partner and you admitted the patient and you signed off at 8 o'clock the next morning and he or she delivered, forget about you being a hospitalist. You're both OBs. You admit, your partner delivers. Both of you are taking the exam. Who has to include that case on the list, as you understand it?
I would think the partner that delivered.
Correct. So the fact that you admitted as a hospitalist is that doesn't make any difference. Your partner would be the one, if he or she weren't taking the exam, he or she would have to put that case in his or account for it. If it was an uncomplicated case, there's nothing to account for. But if it had any issue, any complication, he needs to put it on his list. So I think that relieves you of a lot of work. That's the basic principle. If you have any other further specifics, this isn't the kind of case. Based on what you've told me thus far, I don't think what I'm going to say is necessary. But if you have any other issues that come up, I would tell you the safest thing to do, and this is for everyone, write an email to ABOG. They are very good at responding in a very timely manner, virtually always before the end of the day, and typically within the hour, and they will tell you. And then you just follow whatever they tell you. And the other thing that you should keep in mind, if you choose to do this, when you walk into the exam, It's not the case that your case has been red flagged. The examiners have no clue whatsoever that you posed this question to ABOG, and it's not relevant. They don't need to know. So if you have anything in doubt, don't phone them. Put it in an email to them. You'll get a very quick response, and you'll be able to move forward. So are you okay with that question, Anne?
Yes.
Okay. What's next?
That really covered it. The only last thought that I had on my email was if you had any further advice on how to build my office list as a hospitalist. I feel confident in my OB and GYN list and numbers with the volume that I'm seeing. It's just the office section that is more of a struggle.
So look, I'm listing categories here, okay? Which as a hospitalist, I'm guessing you would not have a problem finding patients to fit here. Number one, UTIs, you could do that. You might have a patient who's a little bit hirsutic. For the sake of the conversation, you can write down, choose your patient. You say mild hirsutism, concern for baby. And if you do that, you may not want to do this because as a hospitalist, it might be that you don't want to get involved in a hirsutism conversation. But if you're comfortable to do that, then put down. I'm sure in the year of collecting cases, you would have had a patient who was slightly more hirsute than normal. Doesn't mean to say it was pathological, but you can just write mildly exaggerated hirsutism, and you can write the basic hirsute workup or counseling, no further workup. But once you've got those words, hirsute, on your cases, be ready for the conversation. So you can put one or two cases into that. If you, it's unlikely, but you could have a one of your pregnant patients who has hyperprolactinemia. That's a great conversation piece. Vaginal discharges and STIs I've already discussed. I'm sure, have had pregnant patients who happen to have fibroids. It didn't prevent them from getting pregnant, and it may not affect their pregnancy. It may affect their delivery. We don't know, but you can put that down in the leiomyoma category, and say counsels on pregnancy related issues with respect to fibroid, and get that conversation going. What else do I see here? Abortion management, we've discussed. Ultrasound, we've discussed. Do you have any patients that are homeless or victims of spouse abuse or rape? Do you have any of those kind of patients?
Yes, I do.
So there's another category for you. Look, take all your patients and pretend they're not pregnant. Just take up the fact that they're pregnant and then see what's left. And that's where you choose where to put your cases into the categories in the office section. Does that make sense to you?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So that was pretty easy. Look, folks, it's going to be a somewhat a short session. All the questions that I got from Anne, and they were good questions. Thank you very much, Anne. I'm not knocking you, but the questions this week and also the last time we did this, they were more logistical questions. I want to encourage you folks to ask clinical questions because there's a lot more to discuss, a lot more information I can give over to you. Whether it's a discussion on diabetes or preeclampsia is irrelevant. They're invariably multiple other issues that come up in the conversation, which is relevant for everyone. So I encourage, and folks, I know historically, all of you have got cases on your, on the cases. You're not sure how to defend them. You're not sure how to present them, how to write them down. They may have had a complication. And you're not sure what you're going to write and or what you're actually going to say in the exam. And those are the cases, the clinical cases, which are really very, very valuable in an interaction such as we're having here with a teleseminar. So I want to encourage you all to volunteer. You notice I mentioned Anne's first name, not a, never her last name. I'll never mention anyone's last name. So, you know, if you get a question wrong or you may have screwed up in the management of a particular patient, no one's going to know who you are. You'll remain absolutely anonymous. So I encourage you all to join and send us your questions. Now, our next teleseminar is going to be in, we've reset the clock, so to speak. This teleseminar was 1 week earlier than it should have been, because I'm going to be in Baltimore next week and lecturing with our cases construction course. So this session that we're doing today should have been next week Sunday. We're doing it today, and we're resetting the clock. So the next one will be 2 weeks from today, on the 17th of May. That's when our next teleseminar will be. And I'll just remind you folks, and it is a shameless plug, if there's anyone listening who's planning on attending our cases construction course, our one and only live in person cases construction course will be this coming Sunday in Baltimore. So if you're interested, give the office a call and sign up. I'm guessing by now most, if not all of you, have already watched the cases construction course online. But either way, I know it sounds like a plug, and yes, it is a plug, but it's probably the single most impactful thing that you can do to help you pass the board. It really gives you a completely different insight into how to go about constructing your case list. So with that out the way, Anne, I will say thank you so much to you. I appreciate it. Thanks to everyone else listening in. And we'll do this again on the 17th of May. Thank you, folks. This then concludes our teleseminar. Take care.